You know what I look at it like? Think about this. Like, beyond boxing. Well, I can relate to boxing because I love it. You know what I mean? But I can more so relate to the kids that are coming in the gym that ain't got a mother, a father, that ain't got structure, that ain't that don't have money. You know what I'm saying? I can relate to that. I was in prison, right? And this dude goes like this. He said, man, he looked at me and he said, I don't know how you don't kill yourself. It felt amazing because listen, my whole life changed overnight. I swear to you on my life. Now the people that don't necessarily like me, now they love me. Now the girls that are like, you know, you look good, but you ain't got no money. Now they love me. You know what I mean? The friends are coming everywhere.
Hello and welcome to Boxing Life Stories with me, Chris Dix.
What happened in the ring after Tyson Oliver was child's play compared to that one?
I still get goosebumps to this day.
you couldn't take the tears from his eyes or the smile off his face, could you?
I know.
He's bitten me. He said, well, let's put you back. And the paper, they made me look like Al Capone.
This is going to be your night.
His winning and his nothing else.
Hello and welcome back to Boxing Life Stories. This week I'm joined by the Pittsburgh kid, Paul Spadafora. Although actually I might be starting off with an error there. You'll learn in this podcast what PK stands for and it might well not be Pittsburgh kid. But Paul is the former IBF lightweight champion of the world and quite frankly, he has one of the most explosive stories in boxing. One that includes a lifetime of trauma, monumental lows and a fight for redemption that is up there among the best that I have heard in all of sports, and not just in boxing. I thought this was absolutely spellbinding. When people ask me, or people say, oh, I wish you could go back in time and do a Boxing Life Stories with Johnny Tapia, I think this is about as close as you'll get to Johnny Tapia. This was phenomenal. I can't say enough things about it, really, and all I really wanted you to do is hear it, and let me know what you think, because I don't know if I work sometimes in an echo chamber where I work on my own and obviously speak to fighters and upload everything on my own. It'd be interesting to know what you guys make of this, if you think this is as much of a wild ride as I did, because as you hear about, maybe even about the 50-minute mark, I kind of run out of things to say, just because I'm speechless. But Paul is a guy I'd not really considered for this podcast, partly because I never thought he would really want to talk about the lows and the bad times, partly because he hadn't been on my radar, partly because I reached out to Paul more than 20 years ago for an interview when I was passing through Pittsburgh and we didn't manage to hook up and that turned me off. But I caught up with him on social media recently and I thought, it's 20 years. 20 years is 20 years. Like, we've all changed a lot and I wondered if he fancied doing it. And he messaged me back and I was really happy to hear from him and I was really curious about what he was doing now, because he is a guy who you just don't hear too much about these days, and he was a big deal back in the day. And I remember going to a couple of his fights. I remember working with Mike Akery to set up interviews with Paul. I think I did a couple of phoners with him back in the day, and he was a big deal and he was on the verge of getting those super fights, but we talk about them here. So when he messaged back, I was thrilled, and it is a truly phenomenal story. And sadly, as an interviewer, one that did leave me speechless, which is never a good thing to be. But this is that good, and I would very much like to work with Paul again in the future in some way, shape or form. Before I leave you with Paul, a couple of things. I have launched a new podcast, Ringside Rewind, with Ian Dark and John Rawling, talking about the highs and lows of their careers, the big fights, the big names they've worked with. And it has been absolutely hilarious. We've got 6 episodes in the bank. They're all up on my Patreon at patreon.com/Tristix. And we will be releasing them on a weekly basis. There's a trailer up on Apple and Spotify on all good podcast platforms. So search Ringside Rewind and check it out. But me, Darkie, and JR, I've had a lot of fun recording them. They've had me in hysterics. It's been brilliant. And before I leave you with Paul, huge thanks to my sponsors, Hansenly Resourcing. They were voted the UK's best specialist insurance sector recruitment firm at the Corporate Excellence Awards. Not only do Hansenly find you the best people, but they help you retain them. And you can find out more at hansenly.com. We're also brought to you by Delco Safety Compliance, and they are a leading provider of professional fire risk assessments and safety services nationwide. They provide expert impartial advice on all aspects of fire health and safety compliance, and you can find out more at delcosafety.co.uk. I know I keep saying this over and over and over again with these guys, with Blaz at Hanson Lee and Del at Delco Safety. These guys are legit friends. And it's proved no more in the sense that they are at my wedding this weekend. And I'm delighted that they will be there. I'm really excited, obviously, about getting married and having a few drinks with the guys. So, guys, look up Hansenly Resourcing Delco Safety Compliance. And now here's the spellbinding Paul Spadafora.
So, Paul, how are you doing? It's been a while since we've seen you out and about. Like when your social media stuff came in front of me, I was like, now there's a guy I need to speak to. How are things?
Everything's going good. I'm moved out to Vegas. Hey, Nadine, how do you get this thing off of here? I can't see him. Hey, there you are. But everything's going good. I moved out to Vegas with my son. My son's fighting. And just come out here, try to train, give back what I have. I mean, I spent my whole life boxing. That's all I know. I mean, like when I say that's all I know, that's literally all I know. If me and you was driving in a car and we broke down, our tire got flat. Well, guess what? We're booked. If you don't know how to fix the tire, we're stuck. You know what I mean?
Because boxing's been the life. So I mean, you messaged that obviously the other day. I mean, is it something that you still got a passion for despite everything, the ups, the downs, and everything else? Do you still love the game?
I love the sport. I love the game. You know what I mean? I mean, with all my heart, I love it. I love what it creates. I love the discipline of it. The kids learning. I mean, you're able to change. It literally changed my life. Despite what I did to myself, and I only blame that on myself, is boxing changed my life. If I wasn't a boxer, I'd be doing life in prison.
Hey, you say the stuff that you've done to yourself, but you haven't had a great hand in life, right? You've had a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's not necessarily all the stuff that you've done to yourself, but we'll come to that in a bit. Hey, obviously you were known for your tattoos back in the day. What was the last one that you had done?
I put my trainer PK,
okay,
on my face, and because he's the one that made me, and I mean him, or it was like he was like my father, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So that was Charles, right?
Yeah, Charles PK Pecor.
Yeah, so he took you under his wing and convinced you to stop playing high school basketball, right? And told you during the same conversation to drop out of school, right? And say, look, you're a fighter.
Yeah, I told him to come to my game. And he come to the game. I was a good point guard. I was probably freshman playing point guard. You know, I could dribble, I could shoot, I could do all that. But he seemed to think that I was wasting my time. And when he said that to me, I was like, hold up, man. What is he talking about? And then I just was like, he's right, I guess. He said, how big are you going to be? Look at me. I'm only 145 pounds right now. You know what I mean? I'm only I'm like 5'9", 5'7", at that, 5'8", at that. You know what I mean? So it's like, he was right.
So, I mean, I was going to say, what was your relationship like with Charles? But the fact you got a tattoo of him shows that you guys were tight. Were you always tight? Was that the way things always were?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, man. If PK would have never passed away, like I got his hat right here. It's my man right here. Look, I got his hat, PK. People don't understand. That don't they say, I asked Rachel, his wife, I said, Rachel, when he passed away, I said, would you care if I hold my pizza? And they took it and ran with the Pittsburgh kid. But the Pittsburgh kid's Billy Kahn, and everybody knows that. I'm Billy Kahn. You know what I mean? I'm PK Bacor. That's my nickname is.
Okay, so the Pittsburgh kid didn't necessarily come from where you were from, and obviously it wasn't a nod to Greb. It was your respect to your coach.
Yeah, and you know something, like I was brought up in Pittsburgh in all the bad neighborhoods, and I had a big following just because I went to Stone. I had a rough life. I went to probably like 30 different schools. You know what I mean? I've been in many street fights. You know what I mean? Just being, you know, it's just being that dude, I guess. Being like, you know.
Yeah, sure. You had you were known to have, you know, everyone who knew your story back in the day, they knew that you had a hard childhood. So how tough was it? How tough is Pittsburgh? I mean, when we hear of ghettos, maybe we think of New York and Cincinnati and other places.
Pittsburgh's just a blue collar town, but like it's just how could I put it? It's a blue collar tough town, you know. And I love Pittsburgh, but it brought a lot of trouble into my life. You know what I mean? Because of the neighborhoods where I was at, and the like, I wasn't. You know, you're going to, well, I mean, I can tell you, I don't want to say crazy stuff, you know what I mean? But, you know what I mean?
There was some crazy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to fight. You're going to end up fighting, basically, when, you know what I mean?
So when your parents divorced, you went and lived with your dad. Was he into boxing? And was that when you started fighting and stuff?
My father was a boxer. Yeah, he always had a heavy bag. You know what I mean? He'd always hit the heavy bag. But I didn't start boxing back then. I left. I went with my mom when I was in fifth grade, and then I met a guy named Head, and he took me down to gym. And I actually went to PK's gym. This is crazy. I went to PK's gym. That like with my brother, I was like, I started hitting the bag southpaw. I'm not a southpaw. I'm really right-handed. My brother's right-handed. He was fighting southpaw, and I wanted to be like my brother. He was my older brother. So the guy told me, you know, I said, no, and I was a street kid. You're telling me I can't do something. I'm not going to listen to you. I wasn't going to listen to you. So I went up to the Hill District up in Jack's gym, started fighting, and I had one fight. I met PK at the fights. I told PK, this guy told me that I can't come to your gym because I wouldn't change up southpaw. He kicked that guy out of the gym, and me and PK became like this.
Wow, that's interesting about your. So are you right-handed?
Yeah, he said like this to me. Check this out. He said, I've been waiting for a guy. This is honestly the truth. This is probably after my like fifth fight. He said, I've been waiting for a kid like you to walk in my gym for 50 years. Oh, God, that's what he said to me. Yeah.
So, obviously, even though you had these scrapes in the street back in the day, you weren't like a super aggressive southpaw, though you could be. But you were obviously a pure boxer, right? You were a smooth southpaw. So, did that go against your instincts?
But you know what? Well, before, when I got shot when I was 16. I got shot in the leg when I was 16. And before that, I was a really good body puncher, and I'd be able to stop people. But when I got shot, I had to come up with a whole new different style where you actually had to be in the pocket, make them miss, make them, you know what I mean? I'd make you miss like by this much. Instead of running around and do all that crazy, I couldn't move my legs like that. I wasn't good on my legs like that.
Tell me a story about you being shot.
Well, I was with one of my friends, and the cops put the lights on, and we was in the car. The car wasn't stolen. It was his car, And, you know, we was drinking and I actually take the blame for it because I told him, go, let's go. And we got into like a 10-minute high speed chase. We wrecked and the cop came up to the car, broke the window with the gun and just started shooting in the car. So that's how he shot like 3 times in the car. So that's, the one hit me in my leg.
So I'm guessing that even though you're obviously high, your adrenaline's high and stuff, that still hurt like anything, right?
Yeah.
Where did you get shot? Whereabouts in the leg?
And right in my like this area, right there.
Oh wow! So that's the bullet wound right in the shin.
Yeah.
Jeez, man. So,
I want to tell you a story. So after this happened, right? I'm at the hospital. PK shows up at the hospital, right? He's like, did you get shot in your knee? I'm like, I didn't know at the time. He's asked the doctor, is he shot in his knees? I know he got shot in the shin. Oh, he'll be all right.
As long as it's not the knee.
Yeah, I was cracking up. PK's funny. Never gave up on me, man. He never gave up on me. And then it became hard. Listen, and then he was Italian. You know what I'm saying? Italian, you know, a part of, you know what I'm saying? People loved them there and stuff. And he had a backing for me where I can get back, like where I can get like, because I didn't have no money.
So sponsors and stuff.
I didn't have no managers. I didn't have nothing. And it took me, when I got shot, I had to prove myself. You know what I mean? And then the Olympics was never something that I wanted to do. I always wanted to be a professional. And I got on USA Tuesday Night Fights against a regular guy on the undercard of Camacho. And that my friend from the neighborhood, my boy Darnell, he if it wasn't for him, I would never get on TV. He paid for me and PK to go out there, you know what I mean, and get on TV. And when I got on TV, he I ended up with managers and they took care of me. And listen, I'm going to tell you like this. Not everybody had I can admit, not everybody had a upbringing. I don't even know if they could even have an upbringing like this anymore. Like the way I was fighting every single month because I had to, or, you know, my problems in the streets and stuff. You know what I mean? My addiction in the streets, and I was into the alcohol. You know what I mean? I always drank alcohol. You understand what I'm saying? And boxing kept me away from that.
Sure. Yeah, man. And, you mentioned your brother a little bit ago. So that was Harry, right? And you were going to the gym with him.
Yeah. My brother was a good amateur, number 3 in the country.
So I guess you did a lot of sparring with him, right? Or were you different weights? You guys fought.
Yeah, I mean, we did a lot of boxing, but he'd always try to get down to the gym before me and steal my sparring.
What was it like with you and him? Was it brotherly love, or did you guys not hold back?
No, brotherly love. He was 156 pounder. He had a mean left hand, so I tried not to run into that.
And so, am I right in saying that your dad passed away from an overdose when you were real young, when you were 9?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, 2 things. I mean, A, how hard was the first one? How hard was that to cope with at the time?
It's really hard because I went from living in a neighborhood. My dad was a crane operator. And remember, if you're not familiar with Pittsburgh, but it's a steel mill town. Not when they had the steel mills in, so he had a good job and he was financially okay. My dad came over from Italy, and he's a hard worker. And when he passed away, I didn't feel comfortable with my stepmom living there with her. I just didn't feel comfortable. I just wanted to go with my real mom. You know what I mean? But my real mom had issues, and we went from living in a nice neighborhood to going to probably 30 different schools, You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Only white dude in the school, that type of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Did you struggle to adapt?
Always fighting, always fist fighting, always doing this. But when I met PK, I was 14 years old, right? I met PK, I was 14 years old. And after I met PK and I start boxing, I'm telling you something. I could count on my hands how many times I got into street fights. Because boxing actually saved, I didn't have to prove myself to nobody. I didn't have to do that no more. It was crazy.
So with all due respect, when you mentioned, you know, when we talk about the start that you've had, obviously with your dad and then with your mom moving to the different areas, it's not exactly set you up for success, but did that give you the resolve to go on and do what you did and that determination?
You know, I'm going to tell you what I really believe that gave me the drive. And like, I wanted to do something. I was with a girl. I met this girl young, 14 years old, down McKee's Rocks. We was together for like 20, we broke up when I was like 21. And I was getting up and up. I was at the time, I was the prospect of the year, Ring Magazine prospect of the year. And I was probably 17-0, 16-0, I forget. I was around that. And she had a baby. And the baby was, I thought the baby was mine. To this day, the baby's last name is mine. But the baby was black, half and half. You know what I mean? Was one of my boys. It was one of my best friends' babies. And that like crushed me. But I had a drive. One night, listen to this. One night, I was so mad because I was crying. I mean, how wouldn't I crush somebody? I mean, it did something that like I can't even explain. You know what I mean? And one night I was in the mirror for 24 hours shadow boxing, thinking bingo. And when I say 24 hours straight shadow boxing, 24 hours straight shadow boxing with no nothing, just me in the mirror. You know what I mean? That's how the rate. And then it just was like, no way. I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it. There's no way that I'm not going to make it. And that's the way I put it. I just, that's how I, you know, and I tell you what, my promoter put me in position to make it. You know what I mean? I'll tell you another story. Well, I was fighting, Israel Cardona was fighting David Sample on USA Tuesday Night Fights. And I was 4-0 at the fights. And I'll never forget, I lived with my grandma because my mom was having problems. So I lived over with my grandma. My grandma was from, my whole family's from Italy. So I go over, I have PK drop me off after the gym. And he calls me on the phone. To this day, I remember his number, 781-4491. He calls me on the phone, right? And he's like, Paul, put on USA Tuesday Night Fights. So I put it on and I'm watching Cardona fight David Sample, and they keep shutting the lights out in the building. David Sample's showing me how easy it's going to be to. I mean, I never know I was going to fight Cardona, but PK told me that day, he said, Paul, you ever get a chance to fight this guy, you can beat this guy right now. I'll never forget that. So, and then now listen, that's 4-0. Now I'm 26-0, and I'm fighting the guy that my trainer, even though he passed away, my trainer told me, this dude is built for you. The style is perfect. When Shane Mosley moved up in weight, I somehow moved right in. You know how boxing is.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. You know how it is. And they slid me right in the number two spot. I got a mandatory shot with a guy that I went 4-0, and I owned him. If you didn't watch the fight, I owned him. You know what I mean?
So let me ask you this, Paul. So, like, obviously, you know, in terms of your fight and you were a success in that, and then you'd mentioned obviously not being settled at all as a kid. Did boxing give you that consistency where you go to a gym regardless and you have an identity and where you are accepted, and you just hadn't had that all the way through that sort of, I suppose the best word is traumatic experience that you'd had until your mid-teens, right?
I mean, but Boston made me who I am. I mean, I don't know how to do nothing. So, like, for instance, like, if I was to get a job, when I've been working for 5 years, if I was to get a job, it has to be labor. You know what I mean? But I'm not going to let no one out labor me. I'm not going to, it gave me that type of thing. If we're in the gym, I'm not letting no one outwork me. As a trainer, I'm not going to settle for, like, just sit there and do this and do this and do this and do this. No, I'm hands on. You know what I mean? And boxing gave that to me. You know, and the people around boxing gave that to me. You have to remember when PK passed away. Listen, when PK passed away, PK was my trainer. He was my head trainer. That was my trainer. That's the guy that I call my trainer. But I got a chance to be with guys like Tommy and Kello. Okay. Jesse Reed been with multiple, you know, when you say Orlando Canizales, you're talking about a Hall of Fame, one of the baddest dudes I know. Orlando Canizales, I got a chance to be with Emmanuel Stewart. I got a chance to be with Buddy McGirt. I got a chance to be with my favorite fighter ever, Pernell Whitaker. I got a chance to be around Panama Lewis. I mean, I had the chance to learn from, and I tell him, as soon as I met them, I told him, anything you show me, I'm stealing. Because one day I'm going to be a trainer. One day I want to be a trainer. That's my dream. I would love to be a trainer. It's, you know what I mean? Cutting these trees down ain't no joke. You know what I mean? I would like to. And you know what? It would be a sin. It would be a sin for me not to give back the knowledge that I know to another kid. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, so you mentioned Pernell there. That's where I was actually going to go. So I knew that you looked up to Pernell back in the day, but did you even look back into him before you had your style change and before you were shot? Or was that something that when you adapted, you were like, oh yeah, maybe I'm more that kind of guy?
Yeah. Yeah. When I got shot and I had to change my style, it was definitely, you know what I mean? Cause I was like, I was a more body guy, like Chavez. I'd go to the body a lot. You know what I mean? And then I had to be more slippery. I had to be more, you know, to the right, make a miss, go to the right, hit. You know, I wasn't a big power puncher. I wasn't a big power puncher. I had to box. How many times I went 12 rounds? I don't even know. Maybe 20, 30, 15, 20 times. You know what I mean?
And let me ask you this. So I've done this with Kelly Pavlik, and obviously he talked about the pressures of being a fighter from Youngstown, right? Is that something you relate to, being from Pittsburgh?
Yeah, sure.
In terms of like a medium-sized city and everyone knowing your business and where you're at and stuff?
Yeah, that's 100% just like that. Just like that. I'll tell you a story. I was in the junior. I was working with a kid named Vaquan Kimbrough, right? And we're in Philadelphia. And he was number one in the world. Verquan ended up being number one in the world. And I seen this white kid fight. He's 132 pounds. He was young. It was Kelly Pavlik. I said, there's the guy who you got to watch for. That is the guy. And then I would get out in the gym and I tell this guy, I go to Ohio with Jack Lowe, his trainer. I'd go down there all the time. The box, I would get sparring with Kenny Cerrone, Greg Kick, just regular 10-round fighters, good guys. And I just couldn't believe how great Kelly was. And I mean, he was just amazing, I think.
I remember Vercan Kimbrough, actually. He was a big muscly, he was a muscly dude, wasn't he? Really strong and well-built. So your style then, Paul, so it's one that, you know, probably more people should support. And I remember seeing Andre Ward talk about this once on a podcast, where he's saying that, you know, too many people in boxing, whether it's analysts or fans, want all action and stuff. But obviously what we really want to do is appreciate the masters of the sport, right? And the guys who hit and don't get hit. And that's what we want to, you know, and really we probably don't celebrate those guys enough.
Yeah, and it ain't, the art of it is, it seems like, I tell you what, I was at this amateur tournament with my son, and my son's boxing beautifully, boxing the way he's supposed to do, box, hit, knock it, hit, knock it. But they're more interested You know what I mean? It's just the way they're bringing them up. It's the way it is. That's just how it is. They're just bringing them up. This bum 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 bum. But then you have to say the teachers are dying. The guys that are great. The Eddie Futches, the Mayo Stewarts, all these Jesse Reed. They're getting older. They can't really show you the angles anymore. I'm with Jesse right now. He trains my son right now. Jesse Reed trains my son right now. And he, like, I know what he's talking about, so I can relate, so I help him. He tells me what to do, and boom. And them teachers are Kenny Adams, great trainer. You understand what I'm saying? These guys are getting older.
Yeah, you know, sure.
And they're still working there, and they're still doing, and they're still in the gym doing what they got to do. You know what I mean?
Wait, Kenny's still at the City Boxing in Vegas?
Yeah. Kenny's still at the gym every day. Yeah. He's doing one-arm push-ups.
Are you?
I swear to God of my life, I've seen him with my own eyes do like 10 one-arm push-ups. So he's not with the bullshit. You know what I mean?
Hey, so obviously we touched upon it. You were a good amateur, right? So when you turned pro, what was the idea? Was it to put food on the table, or was it to be a world champion?
It was to put food on the table. You know, I always thought I was going to be a 10-round main event fighter, go in the backyard and beat the shit out of you, go in your backyard. But it ended up being totally different. I ended up being a 10-round fighter, and then people were coming to my backyards, and then, you know what I mean? And how I didn't fight Mayweather, how I didn't fight Stevie Johnson, how I didn't fight Cesar Brazon, Castillo, I can't tell you that. But I can tell you this. I grew up from an Italian person, and the rules were this: you don't talk to your manager or your promoter. Just be happy they're giving you money to put your food. And my trainer never let me touch my fight money. You understand what I'm saying? And when I touched my fight money, I kept touching it, and then all of a sudden the money ran out.
Yeah. Well, that's a familiar story, right? It's a familiar story. Hey, so were you popular when you turned pro in Pittsburgh? Were people coming and showing up to see you right from the start?
What's that?
When you turned pro in Pittsburgh, were people showing up to see you right from the start?
Yeah, I had a good following, right? From a four round fighter. Like I'd go to my manager was Al Monzo, and we put 1,500 people in the place.
And then you were fighting basically five times a year for the first four or five.
I mean, first year I was fighting like 8-10 times a year.
Yeah. And you like that. You like the busyness, the activity. Because when we talk about you, or you talk about old school stuff, very rare for a prospect to get that.
Let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you something. The inactive fighter don't have a chance with an active fighter. You have to stay active in order to be good. I believe that. I believe that thoroughly. As an amateur too. As an amateur, this is what you're learning. When you lose, you learn. When you win, you win. It's you're just learning. You're always learning. You're always learning. Because you have to master your craft. You got to master that. Before I let my son take off his headgear, he'll be a professional. You know what I mean? He'll be blocking like this. He won't be blocking like this. His elbows will be in. His chin won't be down. You know, that type of thing. He'll learn how to take time off the clock. He'll learn how to walk away. He'll learn how to do things that people can't. That you just don't teach no more. Nobody does that. Nobody teaches how you take. Sitting there here, I'm on the inside blocking. So now, you're okay. Fuck blocking. I'm walking. I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to take the time off the clock. Boom, boom, boom. I'm going to win this. And then I'm going to take a walk. When do we see it anymore? When do we see guys boxing like that? Taking walks, wasting time, chilling, relaxing. How many times? When do you see it?
So I suppose what you're talking about is what you hear these days is ring generalship, right? But you don't see too much of it.
That part.
So those early days, right, those first 25 fights that came real quick, were you drinking in those days?
I'd always drink. But I would drink. It wouldn't be a long drinking thing. I had no money. I was making $50 a round. You know, yeah. So after the fight, boom, I maybe drink for a day or two. I'm back in the gym on Monday. You understand what I'm saying? But then when I got to, I fought Cardona. Now I'm a Pittsburgh kid. Now all of a sudden, I'm instead of making, you know, okay, I fought 12. Let me tell you something. I fought 12 rounds for $600. I've been in fights like that. You understand what I'm saying? And now I'm making 200,000, 500,000. It might not be a lot of money now, of course. It's not a lot of money now, but these YouTubers, how about the YouTuber guys? They're making millions of dollars and it's amazing. And then when I hear people say it's good for boxing, because it's bringing out people, I guess because they got, I don't understand how that could be good for boxing.
No, well, hey, I had the perfect example of that because my son is like 15 and he wanted to see one of these YouTube fights that they put on a regular boxing bill. And so I bought the pay-per-view for him and he literally sped the thing up to the fight with the YouTubers, watched the fight and turned it off, and he had no interest in the rest of the stuff. So we kind of see that. So you're not going to expand the audience because they're just going to pick what they want to watch off it. But yeah, I can see you're getting pretty hot about that and the amount of money being spent on these guys without paying their dues in the sport, right? That's got to be the worst thing when you talk about your track record through the amateurs and then having so many fights before winning a world title and stuff. Like, you paid a lot of dues and now these guys, like, three fights, four fights, are making millions.
They're making millions. I mean, look at Jake Paul. He's about to fight Rockman. You know what I mean? And it's like Rockman paid his dues. He's always in the gym. I go to the same gym with him. He's always working. They're always in the gym. But I'm saying that he grew up in the gym. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying? His dad was the heavyweight champion of the world. You know what I mean? And then, I mean, I feel I'm glad that he got a fight like that. And then he can make whatever they make, whatever that is. I feel good for Hossein, but you know what I'm saying? You understand? But the sport, I'm just talking about the sport in general.
One of these
YouTubers is going to end up getting knocked out, poked up.
Hey, so PK passed away in 97. How did that stack up with all of the stuff that's gone through in your life? Was that up there with the worst?
That was the worst. That was the worst. I lost my brother a couple years ago, and I don't want to talk about that.
Harry, you lost about?
Charlie.
Was he younger or older?
He was younger.
And was he still in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, he was smoking crack. He died smoking crack.
Jeez, man. So you've got this permanent reminder of what it was like in Pittsburgh. Which does this explain why you're in Vegas now, to stay away from the temptations and stuff?
Yeah, it's not. It ain't no good. Let me tell you something. I was drinking. Okay. I stabbed my brother. He stole my son's Christmas present. So I wasn't with that. And I couldn't beat him. So I have to beat him. So I poked him. Cops came. They Rodney King me. You remember Rodney King? But I didn't get paid for it. I didn't get paid to get Rodney King. They had my cases. They gave me 7 open aggravated assaults on police. Meaning if you get in trouble, I had to wait this much time to get out of Pittsburgh. If I get in trouble one time, I go back in front of that judge and I'll die in jail.
Did you ever get to meet Johnny Tapia?
I never met Johnny Tapia, but Johnny Tapia was trained by Jesse Reed, and Jesse would always talk to me about Johnny Tapia.
What kind of stuff? Because obviously, I'm guessing Jesse sees similarities, right, between them.
Of course. and he would always tell me he would just always tell me he don't want to see me even nowadays. Like Jesse's a really he's helping me major out here, and he would tell me like, I don't want to see you end up like Johnny Tapia. Kenny Porter told me that one time too. I stay with Kenny Porter. He was training me for like 6 months down in Vegas at the end of my career. And he said, Paul, you keep it up, you're going to end up like Johnny Tapia. You keep it up. Because that's when drugs got involved. And soon, I want to tell you something. Soon as the drugs got involved, I would say when I was 28 years old, I really can't even consider myself a real fighter back then. I can't consider, you can't do drugs and be a boxer. You can't drink and be a boxer. You can't lie to yourself and act like you can, you're going to beat somebody like me when I'm coming. I'm in the best shape. I'm all about this and I'm not drinking. I'm not doing nothing. How are you going to beat me? You're smoking weed and you're doing this and you're doing that. How can that happen? I'm gonna just outwork you.
If you could do your time again, let me ask you this in two ways. If you could do your time again, would you do things differently?
If I could do it again, see, I was loyal to my promoter, Mike Agee.
Yep.
I wouldn't pick up a fucking glass of alcohol, not one. I would never put that in my body ever in life. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? If I could do it again, I would. That's the first thing I would never do. And we didn't have social media, so I'm not a call out type of guy anyway. I'm not that type of guy. You know what I'm saying? I'm not that. I just can't be. I'm not like that. You know what I mean? But I would ask, I would definitely ask my promoter, hold up. On ESPN2, they said they can see me fighting Stevie Johnson, Angel Manfredi, Arturo Gatti. They said that on ESPN2 after I won the title. How do I fight Renardo Cornet? And then I fought Sosa, which Sosa is a beast. Victoria and Sosa could fight. He had me clipped. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? But I just didn't understand that after I showed everybody I can fight for real fight. And is willing to die in there fight, because I showed that I was willing to go all out. You know what I mean? I was booked. Then you fight Mike Griffin. Then you fight him, and no one understands. I'm fighting him I'm going to camp a couple weeks after I had the concussion. The whole camp was terrible. You understand what I'm saying? You understand what I'm trying to say?
So after Sosa, you went into camp with a concussion.
Yeah, I went down to Texas in 100-some degrees heat. Jesse was training with Lou Savarese. He was fighting Mike Tyson, and he had to train both of us. And I fought Mike Griffin, and I looked like shit. I looked like basically like shit. Thank God the HBO gave me a chance to fight Billy Irwin again. Like, gave me another chance to get on HBO, because I thought I was never going to get back on TV again after that performance. I felt like.
Back then, were you hanging out with Tyson? Because he was. Oh, no, you were hanging out with Lou Savarese. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Lou's a cool dude, right?
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
That's cool. Hey, so you started working with Tom Yankello, right? After a few weeks. How did that come about?
Me and Tom, see, PK, I was working with PK, and PK was getting older, was getting sicker, he would have trouble talking, like, you could tell the strokes and stuff. You know, I don't know too much about the health things and stuff like that, but he would let me go with Tommy and let me train with Tommy. I went to go live with Tommy for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. You know what I mean? PK trusted me. I'm not a weirdo. You know what I mean? So he was PK. You know what I'm saying? So he would let me go and work with Tommy. And Tommy, I don't care what anybody says, the best fundamental trainer in the game. Fundamentally sound, no one's better than me in with fundamentals. There's not, no, you can't tell me. All you gotta do is listen to Roy Jones. And Roy Jones, pound for pound, maybe could be arguably the best fighter ever.
Hey, we kind of skipped over this, by the way. Obviously, you said, you know, you won the title against Cardona. Like, how good did that feel to be announced as the IBF lightweight champion of the world? With everything you've been through, with all that trauma and everything else, how good did it feel to hit the top of the mountain?
I mean, it was like a dream come true, you know what I mean? But I just didn't understand why I didn't have my belt that night, because they're supposed to give me my belt that night. But if you look at ESPN too, I'm like, where the fuck my belt at? Where's my belt? I thought I wanted to wrap that thing around my waist, but we'll breathe. I'm like, I never heard no shit like that. But it's cool though, you know what I mean? It felt amazing, because listen, my whole life changed overnight. I swear to you on my life. Now the people that don't necessarily like me, now they love me. Now the girls that are like, you know, you look good, but you ain't got no money. Now they love me. You know what I mean? The friends are coming everywhere, and people, you know, now it's like, now here's where the problem goes. Now you fight on TV, you have the belt, you make this much money, it's obviously you can't keep fighting month to month. You're not staying busy. You're not doing what you're supposed to do, because you're spending time. I never had nothing. I can never go to the restaurants and go to the stores and buy clothes and buy shoes and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So I was hitting everything up. You know, as a young kid, I didn't know. I was young. I didn't have no guidance. I love my mom. My mom's a great lady. But my mom's been on crack since 1994, ever since Pookie, New Jack City. You remember that?
Yeah.
And I'm talking about on it. She's 72 years old right now, on it. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's deep. It's real. Jeez, man. So you know something, but I want to tell you something. What this dude told me, I was in prison, right? And this dude goes like this. He said, man, he looked at me, and he said, I don't know how you don't kill yourself. I said, wow, that's deep. I don't know how you didn't kill yourself. That's what he said to me. Well, the reason why I didn't kill myself is because I never had shit, and I just went back to never having shit. And it was like jumping rope. You know what I mean? You know, you double jump, you gotta pick it up. I'm picking it up. Now I go back to relax it.
You know what I mean? Jeez, man. So yeah, I remember Matthew Saad Muhammad, right? The great light heavyweight champ. He used to tell me, like, sometimes he would wish he never had it all, because when he didn't have it, he wouldn't have missed it, because he didn't know what it was like. You know, do you relate to that?
I can relate to that big, but I would hate to have anything. If I had something and then I got blessed with that little bit of time, five years making money like that, you know what I mean? Yeah. I would have probably went nuts, but yeah. I knew what it was like not to have nothing. So it was just like, it didn't mean nothing to me.
So I suppose you have a real, you put a real value when you see Mike Tyson's success story and you see his trajectory, you can sympathize.
I mean, he came back from that. Amazing. And he's better than he ever was. I mean, he's just a better dude. He's everything about him is better. You know what I mean? And he did that. And how do you come back from something like that? Mike Tyson did, but listen, Mike Tyson is the best heavyweight ever. You heard it right here. I said that. Mike Tyson, in my eyes, is the best heavyweight ever. That's my opinion. I had a chance to watch Mike Tyson. I was with Luis Alvarez and was watching Mike Tyson. All he wanted to do is watch Buster Douglas and versus Mike Tyson. And the more I watched it, the more I seen. That's a smart dude. I mean, he's old school. He's setting things up. He knew, like, on in the eighth round, he knew like Monday comes after Sunday. When I hit you with this uppercut, you're getting knocked out. But that was a long count. Got up and, you know, caught my slip.
That's an unpopular take, though, right? When you look at Ali, Joe Lewis, there's some greats in there, right?
Yeah, Joe Lewis, unbelievable. Ali, they're all the great. They're all great. I mean, hey, unbelievable.
Go ahead.
Okay, I look at it like this, and I'm not taking away from that. You see Muhammad Ali's funeral. He's the greatest. Did you see his funeral?
Yes, I did. Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable. So I don't think Floyd, how's Floyd gonna, you think people are gonna come to Floyd's funeral like that? The president's and all that other stuff, huh?
We'll come to Floyd in a sec. Hey, it was one of the things I wanted to ask you. Obviously, we mentioned drugs a few times. What was the first drug you ever did and when? Was it back when you were a kid?
No, I did ecstasy.
Was that through your years of fame that you tried it?
Yeah. When I won the title, it was after I won the title.
So why was that? Just to sort of get a high, and was it like a peer pressure thing?
Listen, addiction's a mother. You know what I'm saying? And it was in my genetics. You know what I mean? And people would just give me stuff. They would just do anything, you know what I'm saying? I more like trying to turn me on to it, and they turned me on to it, and that's what happened.
Yeah, man. Hey, so obviously we touched upon Floyd there in 99. We've all seen the footage of you sparring Floyd, but before the footage came out, obviously it became legend that Floyd had been out of the gym, came back, went to the gym, and he couldn't do anything with you. Tell me about the session.
I mean, it's just like he come in the gym. We boxed. I don't know if he was in the gym. I don't know what he was doing. But I was like 10 days away from a fight. You know what I mean? I was sharp. I don't care who. Listen, when you love boxing, and I was obsessed with boxing, and I was a big lightweight, 135 pounds. I was 5'8", 5'9". I was big. I'm strong as hell. As a 135 pounder. And there was no way you're just gonna come off the streets and just beat the shit out of me. That ain't happening. Well, how? That doesn't even make sense. That don't, to me, don't make sense.
So what happened? What did he come in and think he was gonna whoop you?
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm he like, didn't.
How? Like, I didn't have it. I'm not the one that. Video. I don't videotape. I never videotape my sparring. I come in deep. I'm talking about the whole gym was packed. When you see a whole gym with cameras come in there, we're on Richard Steele's gym. You don't ever see that. I don't see that. Just for some sparring. You know what I mean? And then that's just how it went down. And he thought he's gonna. I mean, that's just how it was.
You know, so is that one of the things that most people ask you about? Sorry.
Let me tell you something. That I believe wholeheartedly that cost me the fight with him, because the people who put that, whoever put that out there on the internet, I mean, now he was always in charge. Floyd Mayweather was always in charge. He had HBO deals all his whole life. He was great. He was a great, come on. He's one of the best ever. Could argumentally maybe the best ever. You know what I mean? Who ain't gonna give somebody props? You gotta give him his props. And I'm just looking at it like this: Styles make fights, and I seen him one time. I seen him when he fought Castillo, and he told me how I seen him and he was eating. I said, "Good luck tomorrow for your fight with Castillo, the first fight." Because they flew me down there to go watch the fight. And then all of a sudden, I'm at the crap table. I'm running right through you. And then I immediately called my brother, Harry. I said, bro, he really thinks he could run right through me. Nobody at 135 pounds is going to walk right through me right now. Nobody. No, I'm too slick for that bullshit. And then if you watch the last round, how could you to turn southpaw on me? I was like, wow, he really turned southpaw on me. I'm going to clip him with this right hook. He's getting hooked up with this. And then after I hit him, I'm putting my hands down right in front of him. My hands were like this. I'm just going like this. I'm going like this. Punches are going by. Yeah, that's Floyd Mayweather. Those are Floyd Mayweather's punches. Missing by just like that. Just that much.
Yeah. So, and then there was speculation that he was like lying on the floor for 20 minutes after the spar.
I don't know. He's probably tired. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So obviously,
I was going to the body. You know what I mean? Body punches, they make you tired. Yeah. If you're not ready to get hit in the body, they make you tired.
Yeah.
Shit, I don't want hit in the body in a violent shape.
You had mentioned at the start you were finding it hard to get the big names, but you did get the Manfredi fight, right? So that must have been.
But what I get, I got the Manfredi fight in 2001. Come on. Around that time, I'm going to go off. I'm going to say go off record. I was having my issues in the streets.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I was having. So why didn't I get that? Right after, I don't know how it works. I'm not a promoter or a manager, but I can tell you one thing. Before I die, I'll be one of the best trainers you ever hear about. I guarantee that.
So from what I can see, Paul, right, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you've got a real, you had a real crossroads, right, of where you had like a toxic, traumatic background, and then you hit that with wealth, fame, and money and celebrity. And the two things just couldn't cope with one another, right?
No, exactly. And I even talked to him. Okay, listen. All right. You know I shot my girlfriend.
Yes, I remember reading about that. Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, she's right here next to me. If someone shoots me, if it wasn't an accident, you wouldn't be next to me. Motherfucker, you'd be doing, you'd be booked. I'm booking you. You shoot me, I'm booking. You know what I mean? But no, obviously she understood that it wasn't me. That wasn't me. That was the drug, the drugs, the alcohol. That was what that was. That wasn't, and that was just what it was. Circumstances. At the time, people were talking about tying me up, kidnapping me, doing all this other crazy stuff. Because I bought a house right in my neighborhood. Because I never wanted to get brand new, and I never wanted to. Meanwhile, I should have took when I won the title. I should have took my money and moved out somewhere like this, where the fighters are. I shouldn't have. And Jesse would tell me that. Jesse Reed would tell me that all. He would tell me that all the time. Paul, leave Pittsburgh. You got to leave Pittsburgh. You have to leave Pittsburgh. No one got money, so everybody's going to have your money. And that's what happened. People say, oh, he's spending money. No, man. No, I gave my money away. You know what I mean? I paid people's houses for a whole 2 years. People on section, bang, I hooked this up 2 years. I hooked the kids up. I do that. Nah, man. You know what I mean?
Are any of those guys helping you now or speaking to you now?
I don't even know. Yeah.
It's familiar, man. Hey, I've seen this story on loop. You know, Matthew was telling me the same thing. Can't even find the guys now. Tommy Morrison told me the same stuff. He said, I bought one guy's wife boobs and everything. God knows where he went.
I go buy with cars. I'm talking about nice ass cars, like the old school joints. I'd buy a car, this and that. And I tell you what. I'm going to keep it real with you. The only people that call me today are the people that love me. Jesse Reed calls me. My brother calls me. My family, like my close family, my mother and my son. I'm going to keep it 100 with you.
Hey, so Nadine, who you mentioned, who you're with now, she was pregnant at the time when you shot her, right? Was that right?
A miscarriage.
No, she was having a miscarriage.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
I got pregnant with Gina a year later.
She got pregnant with my son a year later.
Okay. Okay. Geez, man. So how'd you guys get, because you did time for that though, right?
Yeah.
How long did you do?
33 months, but really like 19 months in the prison. I did 19 months in the prison, but then I was stuck in a halfway house because I was trying to go to Detroit to work with Emmanuel. Yep. I was going and they didn't let me go into the and Detroit didn't let me go in their town because of my gun violence.
Wow.
You have to get all that, like, it's just the way the DOC program is. You know what I mean?
Man, the guy who's too rough for Detroit, that's too bad, man. That's bad. Hey,
they won't let me go in because I guess too much guns and too many shootings. You know what I mean?
So prison, did you have a target on your back because of who you were, yeah, or did you know people inside and stuff?
That's what I'm saying. Like, that right there is the best question ever. Like, I'm in a penitentiary, right? I'm a boxer in a penitentiary, and I went in several times because of my stupid ass. You know, I violated three times, went back to jail three times. And the thing about it is, I never been in a fight in prison. I never been in I've maybe one altercation, an altercation that was settled without going like this. So it just goes to show you who you become when you put that shit in your body. Like, if you're, I was in Schuman Center, that's the detention center for being young. I was in the Allegheny County Jail. I was in a penitentiary, and I never been in where people were shot a gun for you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's just your experiences though.
So tell me about Emmanuel and your work with Emmanuel.
Emmanuel was a very smart guy. I was out in Marina Del Rey with Emmanuel for about three months. I was out there when we Klitschko's and Vernon Forrest. I think it was when Vernon was fighting for, remember when Vernon fought Shane Mosley?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I was out with him back then, and Emmanuel was a smart guy. I mean, yeah, he was a smart guy. And honestly, you know what he told me? Wait till I tell you this story. You know what he said for me to do with this left hand? I'm not left-handed, but listen to what he told me to do it. Stick it up my ass. It ain't worth shit. Coming from Emmanuel Stewart, wow. That's what he said to me. He's like, use it as a guide with it. I was salty as hell when he said that. I was mad as hell. Imagine someone saying that to you. I was mad as hell. But you know what I mean? That's just the way it is. Emmanuel was extremely smart, and I think Emmanuel really liked punches.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, and then obviously, you know, you mentioned Jesse, and I can see obviously Jesse's having an impact on you now. How much of an impact did he have? I think he obviously predated Emmanuel, right? And how come you went to Emmanuel and left Jesse?
Listen, Jesse, because I was the way Jesse treated me, like I was his son. You know what I mean? And when you go back to the corner, the information is you know, I like to say this, love wins everything.
Yeah.
Love is going to win no matter what. You can't beat love. You know what I'm saying? Love is everything. It's in the Bible. It's all about love. You know what I mean? Life's about love. Too many people hate too much. You know what I'm saying? I don't hate on that. Jake Paul's getting his money. Mayweather fought Conor McGregor. They got their money. You know what I mean? Conor McGregor. You know what I'm saying?
I can see the look. Hey, so you and Nadine, have you guys been together all the way through this time?
No.
On and off. Yeah.
Yeah, on and off.
Yeah. Okay, but she lives out in Vegas with you now.
Yeah, she got herself together. She came out Vegas and just like did her thing, and you know, worked hard, and you know what I'm saying. And Gino said he wanted to fight, but Gino said he wanted to box. So, yeah. Only thing I could tell you about that is, if he wanted to box, I trust it. Listen, I put him with Jesse. I trust Jesse wholeheartedly. But I can't sleep knowing he's in there taking in punches because he don't have to. You know what I mean? When you can if you can box, you don't have to take them unnecessary punches because you can box. And you don't got to box running around boxing. You could be right in front of them. Boom, them little, them angles. Like, remember Orlando Canizales? Remember, boom, them angles, he turned on you, bam, knock you. And the good thing about my son, he can punch.
How old is your son and what style has he got? Is he orthodox?
He's 17. He's a right-hander. You know what I mean? He had fights when he was with me because, you know, that's the way I'm talking about when he was 7, 8, 9, 10, young fights. But they don't count them. So he got four. Since I've been here, he had four fights. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, and he's fighting when?
For the Hall of Fame.
He's fighting in a month from now. I think, you know what I mean?
Oh, and the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame thing. Right, sure.
So, you know what I mean?
He's been doing like just 1 month
too. Just trying to like keep him busy, stay busy. Because I tell him, he don't want to listen to this. I wish he was here so you could tell him. You know, he don't understand it. You're 17 years old. Now you got four fights. When I was 17 years old, I had 80 fights, 70 fights. I was in the gym. When I was 14, I never left the gym. I was sparring with all pros, Eric Poe, Tom Alexander, Baby Hulk, Carl, I mean, you name them, everybody that I so it didn't matter who I fought because PK kept me in the gym sparring with real professional 10-round main event fighters, guys that fight Hector Camacho, like Eric fought Hector Camacho, I was his sparring partner. Tommy Alexander fought Hector Camacho, I was his sparring partner. You understand what I'm trying to say? I was 16 years old at the time. So I'm doing nothing but getting better. It don't matter. So, and now when I turn pro, it doesn't matter who I'm fighting. As long as I'm in the gym sparring and practicing and mastering what I do, put that work in. You have to master that.
He spars with me.
Hey, and so with your son then, how do you break the cycle of trauma and addiction and stuff? How do you do that? Is it just education and communicate?
Communication, but you know what? He never had to go through that.
Yeah.
He never had to. If I could show you the house. I mean, I'm saying, well, he's in a house. You know what I mean? He's in a house. I was underneath the porch. For a long periods of time, you know. What I'm saying?
I heard about this. So this was this at your mom's house, and you didn't want to go in the house, so you slept under the porch.
No. My mom was gone. My mom was doing stupid shit. I had to go over my cousins, and shit, and there was too many people in the house. I was going under the porch. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, it's the best home. Basically, you're homeless. You know what I mean? And towards the end of my career, I had to go into a house, abandoned building, boom, go in there, put my furniture in it, and they call that squatting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was after you being a world champ.
It's after me being a world champ.
Hey man, that's nothing hits harder than that, right? That's brutal to have been at the top of the mountain and then have to accept that, right?
But you know, I was self sabotaging myself all the time. It just never stops. You know what I mean? You know, sometimes I'd be like, "Damn, because people say, well, I might be scared of success, I guess." You know what I mean? But now I grew so much from that, from just everything. I'm talking about everything that I went through in life. You know what I mean? And it's not like I'm selling anything or selling this or selling. No, I don't got to do that. When I go to the gym, when I go to the boxing gym, there ain't no talking. Any kid in the gym needs help, I'm with it. If they're training, I'm not trying to steal no one's fighter. I'm from the old school. We don't do shit like that. You know what I mean?
Well, the very fact you're still standing, that's enough of a sales pitch for anything after everything you've been through, right? Yeah. The fact that you can be where you're at, the mentality you have.
Let me tell you something. Since I've been retired, guess what? I'm not embarrassed to tell you this. I died four times. You hear me?
Yeah.
I mean,
overdoses and stuff.
Yeah, no, not in stuff, overdose. Yeah. So, you understand what I'm saying? So it wasn't this me coming out here. It pretty much was me. If I want to live, I better get out of where I'm at and focus on doing this, or I'm not going to live no more. And I realized that. How? When you got people shooting up your house, how are you supposed to, live? I can't do an argument. Everywhere I go in Pittsburgh, people are like, you know what I mean? Boom, boom, because, you know, the bullshit, you know what I'm saying? And then you end up fighting somebody or hooking somebody up. I'm just being honest. Since I've been retired, I got to do a couple of street fights. And they said I never had power, but I had pretty good power on the street. That's no joke. I'm telling you the honest and God truth. Bink, doink, doink. Down goes Tyson. You know what I mean? So shit like that, you know what I mean?
Man, so well, there was a fight I wanted to ask you about. Obviously, you fought Dennis Pedersen, who then fought Ricky Hatton, but you had this war, right? And obviously, you weren't known for the wars, but I always remember you had this outstanding fight with Leonard Doreen, and it wasn't supposed to be like a thriller, but it was, right? And you guys went to the well, and he brought stuff out in you that you'd never had to show before.
Yeah. And I told my brother, I'll never forget it. We had a rematch. This is what happened. I'm gonna tell you what happened. We had a rematch. The rematch, we was gonna fight for $750,000. You know, I don't want to talk about Leonard because Leonard's a good guy. But when he retired, how do you retire? And then when he retired, when I was at boxing camp training for that fight, he retired. You Google it, look it up. He retired, came out of retirement. I told my brother, Harry, but listen to this. I said, Harry, listen, I promise you. He said, you know, you made that. You fought his style. You fought his style. I said, no, I didn't fight his style. He couldn't take it to the body. And they didn't count knocking in the fourth round. That was a knockdown. Period, point blank. Go look it up. Watch it when you get a chance. You watch the fourth round. Boom, boom. He got hit with a left hand, went down. I said, the 10-8 round, period. No more rap about it. That's the way I feel about it. And whenever I went to camp, my trainer tells me, my promoter, you know, he was very, very controlling. You know what I mean? And as he should with the guy he's dealing with, as he should be, proving how many times over and over to that's the right thing to do. So he tells me we're gonna fight a $50,000 fight up in a non-title fight in a Turning Stone Arena. I went home. I left camp. I'm not gonna. I had my own house. I had money at the time. I left camp. I drank. I did this. I did this. End up shooting my girl. Urinating on the street. Then from there, I went from going down to the bar, and then ended up shooting my girl, and then it all came to a halt. Now check this out. Leonard Doreen comes out of retirement, and I told my brother, I'm not gonna fight Leonard Doreen. He does not like it to the body. What does Arturo Gatti knock him out?
Sure. Yeah. Hey. I've just had a flashback of sorts. Did you have like a yellow Hummer?
Not yellow.
What did you have?
I had a gray Hummer.
Yeah. Gray Hummer. I'm sure I saw that in like newspapers and stuff. Was that linked to the shooting and stuff? You were in that at the time. Man, it's a wild story. Obviously, the Doreen thing, by the way, I did want to ask this. Obviously, you talked there about not getting the rematch. How hard was that fight?
I've been in fights like that before. I thought I won the fight. I'm not going to lie. I thought I put in hard punches to the body. I thought I won the fight. But what are you going to do? I always watch the fight. When I watch the fight, I always turn the music off. I mean, the sound off so I could see. And every time I watch it, I thought I won the fight.
And then obviously I always knew you as a Mike Acri fighter back in the day. So is this why you're... you and Mike just had a handshake, right?
Yeah. Come on.
So,
man.
But were you resentful that you just were fighting in places in Erie and Mount Pleasant? And
after when I come home from prison, it was bad. When I come home and I'm going, how do you go from fighting on TV to fighting in club shows? Yeah, I'm not talking bad about none of the opponents because they're fighters and they're making a living. You know, I'm not the one picking you, dog. My promoter picked you. And I'm not the one asking my promoter who am I fighting. I don't give a fuck who I'm fighting. Just tell me when it is. You know what I mean? And then I just work on, I'm not watching you fight. I'm watching me fight. Because if as long as I'm doing me, as long as Paul at that time, as long as Paul boxes like Paul knows how to box, he's going to give anybody in the world trouble at that weight.
So, well, the dog agrees with you, right? So there's that as well. So, but in 2000, well, I mean, you boxed on, obviously on and off, you know, 06, 07, 08, 09.
Inactivity, but it was still inactivity. Like, I need to be more, you need to be in there more. You can't have a year. One time I had a year layoff, and that's when I had enough of it. I had enough of it. Let me tell you how nice, how real of a guy Roy Jones is. Roy, I had enough of it, dude. I OD'd. Listen, I OD'd. I said, I'm done with it. Because I can't do this no more. Whenever Mayweather fought Victor Ortiz, they lied to me and told me I was going to get the Mayweather fight. They told me that. Meanwhile, that was all pride bullshit. But I talked to Senior before on the phone. But I don't even want to talk about that. So I really believed in my heart that I was going to get that fight. You understand what I'm saying? And then they announced that on the internet around 11 o'clock. And my friend Nicole was like, "Paul, you're not fighting him. Victor Ortiz is fighting him." And that was just it. Guess what I did? I went down the street, I copped them, bang, bang, OD, see you later. Then when I went to the rehab, listen, I went to the rehab and the counselors told me, you cannot, that you're listening to the counselors, these are professional people, you know what I mean? They said, you cannot go back with Mike Gregory. You cannot go, you guys cannot, he's a great guy. I love Mike with all my, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have been a champion. I love Mike with all my heart, but he told me, you can't do it. You're going to end up, you cannot do this. You cannot do this relationship. So Roy Jones, Tommy knew Roy Jones or whatever, however way Roy came to the rehab, and Roy said he was interested in helping me, and Roy stuck to everything he ever said. He got me a chance to fight for the WBA title, but guess what? I lost. You know what I mean? If I'd have won that fight, maybe he'd have got me the big major fight, Danny Garcia, whatever, whoever. You know what I'm saying? Whoever, you know what I mean? But I didn't win. So that's what happened.
Jeez, man. So yeah, you're talking about that fight with Johan Perez, which was up in Chester at the Mountaineer racetrack. Yeah. So yeah. Man, it's just crazy. So obviously, so that OD was 2012, and then you were in a rehab facility for 7 months, and that's the one where Roy went and found you, right?
Yeah.
So how hard is rehab, and is it the hardest thing that you've ever had to put yourself
through? I'm not saying I'm institutionalized, but I'm very, like, I live better on a schedule. It's easy for me. When I go to prison, it's nothing. Just do the right thing. Get up in the morning, go do my road work in the yard, come home, come back, clean myself up, do what I got to do. When I'm in a boxing camp, I'm good. I could adjust good. I'm good. It's nothing. You know what I mean? But
when we see the stuff in Hollywood and stuff, and someone though who's addicted to stuff or being on stuff in a hard way, like, and then they go into whether it's prison or rehab, they have this, their body starts to go against them, right? And they start to get shakes and sweats and all the crap that we see. Is that what you've been through?
No, I don't get them. I don't get them.
So you just basically change your routine and schedule to fit into, and that's the only difference.
It's like 9 day, it's over. It's a wrap.
Do you miss freedom when you? Do you miss freedom when it's taken away from you?
Not too much.
Do you miss the structure when that's taken away from you? The other way around.
Yes. And that's good that I, bro, being out here, it's like being in the And you're not, I'm not saying that I'm locked up, because I'm not locked up, but I'm living a normal life. I don't got people coming at my door trying to give me drugs. I don't got people coming at my door trying to, hey, Paul, let's go drinking. I don't have all that out here. I'm not saying I'm flat broke. No, I'm not flat broke. I'm not bad. I'm just okay. You know what I'm saying? But what I'm saying is, I'm too much of a follower. I'm not a leader. I'm admitting it. I'm not scared to tell the truth. It's just the way I am. You know what I mean?
So if someone came over your door now and said, hey, I've got drink, or I've got drugs, could you say no?
It's too important for me, for my son, for the people in the gym. That part of the selfishness of the drugs and alcohol is gone from me. That part of the selfishness, you know what I mean? Because that's a serious, when you're on drugs and alcohol, you're a selfish motherfucker. And I don't care what anybody says.
When was the last time you took a drink or did any drugs?
I'm good for like 2 years. I don't really count them. I don't count it. I just go about doing it. But I come out here and like clean myself up, put it like that.
Are you in any kind of program, or do you have like counseling and that kind of stuff? And have you had counseling to deal with all the stuff from childhood?
I've been in counseling and stuff like that.
Do you find that useful?
I recommend. I like the one-on-one counseling. I'm gonna get one out here too soon. You know what I mean? Because you never, like you just said, you have to practice. I got myself in a position where it's every morning I go swim. I get up in the morning, I go swim, me and my girl, we go swimming. I swim for an hour. I come home. I don't eat nothing bad at all because she's into this vegan stuff, but I'm not no vegan. I'm not a vegan. Believe me, dude. I like steak. I work at the slaughterhouse. I don't like doing none of that vegan stuff. But anyway, I go to the gym and I talk to Jesse every day. So I'm like, I'm not, and I got a fighter here who I'm working with. He's one-on-one as a professional. You know, he just hurt. He had a fight on the fourth, and he hurt his left shoulder, so he had to pull out the fight. But I got somebody right, you know, who I'm responsible for right here, too. And he's, you know what I mean? Just someone. Someone I know. I mean, you know, whenever you take on challenges, it's good. It's something I like to do. I like to take on challenges.
Hey, you mentioned food there. I heard that you're a good cook, right?
Yeah, I'm Italian.
So what's the house special then? Not steak, right?
No. Let him cook.
Is that Nadine saying she doesn't let you cook?
Yeah.
Because he eats meat and I don't.
I can make pig's feet. I like pig's feet. I love muscles. I like all that stuff.
There's other stuff on your rap sheet, right? Which isn't like said to be like as serious as stuff. There was something about some lady in a headlock.
She spit in my face. I was drunk as hell. You're gonna spit in my face, hawker right in my face. I don't like turned around. I don't like who you are. Boom, she spit right in my face. Well, that's cool. You can do that. As soon as you walk out the bar, I'm gonna show you how I don't like who you are. I just picked her up and slammed her and let her and I walked away. And whatever you say about it, people could say what they want to say about it. You don't spit in someone's face. Man, that's some ignorant ass shit.
I can't get over your stories, Paul. I can't get over your life. I'm gobsmacked that you're still standing. Not only still standing, but obviously talking to me about ambition, hope, your son, and the stuff you want to do moving forwards. Like, I take my hat off to you because, like, that's a serious back catalogue of trauma and stuff, you know? Like,
I look at it like, you know what? I look at it like, think about this. Like, beyond boxing. Well, I can relate to boxing because I love it. You know what I mean? But I can more so relate to the kids that are coming in the gym that ain't got a mother, a father, that ain't got structure, that don't have money, You know what I'm saying? I could relate to that. Now, it's not only that, is there's so many people, there's so many kids. It is about the kids, man. If it ain't about the kids, this is the next thing going. They're the people that we're worrying about. Everybody's worrying about themselves. Nah, it's cool. I'm cool. You know what I'm saying? It's about the kids. It's about the growing when they're coming up and seeing how you can. And when you see you change, when you see what you're telling somebody and they're doing it, it makes you feel like unbelievable. I get blasted off that. And when I tell you blasted, I get blasted. When I see my son hit the dude with that left hook, I said, just turn to the side, bang, and gave him an 8 count. That made me happy as hell. You know what I'm saying? When you see people in the ring sparring and you tell them to do something and they actually do it and it works, boom. Because God gave me an eye for boxing. Because that's all I watch. Like there is no TV watching. You could ask my girl. I'm watching Joe Louis. I'm watching Charlie Burley. You know how hard it is to get them films. But PK sent me tons of films when I was a young buck. Mentor Chavez. Right now, I'm on a kick with Julio Cesar Chavez. Okay, I'm trying to teach my son how to go to the body and how to bump up. You remember how Chavez used to give him little feints when he inside, make you miss. People think that he would. When we was watching the Meldrick Taylor fight, man, everybody scored the way they scored. That was unbelievable to me. It was really unbelievable because Chavez was literally murdering him.
Yeah, he was paying a price for every success he had, right?
Oh my God! And it was a price that was going to take his life. That's how he was coming.
So let me ask you this. When you see your son, obviously I see the excitement that you have about your son fighting, but as a dad, do you have the nerves as well? Because obviously it's a dangerous game.
That's the biggest thing in the world, because that's why I love Jesse, because Jesse, I like sort of let Jesse be the, you know what I mean? And I just want to be the one that teaches him the right way. And you know what I mean? I can show him. Cause I get mad. I get super mad. And a lot of, nowadays you got people like Kenny and Sean. That worked unbelievable. Look how great Sean's a great fighter. Unbelievable. You got that, Teopoma Lopez, him and his dad. So, they're shown, but you remember back when we was coming up, I'm older, I'm 46 years old, but when father and son, they never recommended that. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember it. Well, Shane Mosley and Jack and Roy and his dad. I mean, it didn't always work out, right?
Yeah, exactly. So just like that. You know, I just gotta watch my temper and try to hold back and hope, like, you know what I'm saying? It is frustrating as hell. When you know that what you have to do in order to be to win. And someone that doesn't want to listen to you and do whatever he thinks you can do, that makes you so mad. But you want to know something? Can't put your hands on your son. I learned that. You can't put your hands on. You ain't who you. No. Because what he respects the most is love, and that's the facts. No one ever loved me. Look what happened to me. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? PK was the only motherfucker they were, you know, my I had my grandfather, you know, I got my mom. I know she loved me. You know what I'm saying? I know my brother Harry loves me, but you understand what I'm saying? You know what I'm talking about?
Well, yeah, showing you love. It's one thing loving you, it's another thing showing that love, right?
Yeah. So that's what I try to do. I just don't want no problems. I just want to do the right thing. I just want that to be the past, because it is the past. And I'm perfectly healthy. I believe, this is me. This is just how I feel. I believe I'm healthy enough. You're older. So, of course, you have problems, your knees. I've been running my whole life. I've been hitting the bag my whole life. You know, and of course, you got problems like that. You're going to have problems like that. I got 100 amateur fights. You're going to have problems like that. You know what I'm saying? 52 professional fights. I've been in the gym my whole life. That's the only thing I am. But I think I'm healthy enough to do an exhibition. I wouldn't really want to do an exhibition with anybody but Floyd, just because that's like a dream come true. I just would like to see how I would do since he's doing exhibitions. I mean, just to see how, I don't know, just to see. And you know what I mean? Is what it is.
Hey, when we talk about the fights and your mileage and stuff, are you conscious about stuff about CTE and that kind of stuff, you know, which is the stuff with the concussion crisis in the American football and head trauma and exposure over time and stuff like short-term memory loss and slurred speech and that. Obviously, I can see how you speak. You speak fine, right? Like I can hear the Italian. I can hear the East Coast of you in you. But do you have concerns over the amount of damage you've taken over the years?
I mean, no question. Definitely. I mean, yeah, well, I mean, but it's getting older. But, it, you know, the damage, I've been in a lot. I sparred up tons and tons and tons of punches got hit. I understand all that. Forget about that. It's the way I lived outside the ring for so many years. Sure. That's where the real problem lied. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. Anyone who's overdosed once is playing with fire, let alone someone who's done it several times, four times. And that's even all before the... How many times do you think you blacked out with alcohol?
Oh, man. Blacked out? Yeah. I'm a blackout artist. Call me blackout, dude. A couple of drinks, I'm black. It's already booked. I'm booked. You know what I mean? So it's like playing with fire. That's what it is.
So you won't remember this, Paul, but back in the day, right, me and I think Mike had hooked up me and you to do an interview in Pittsburgh, and I was on the buses at the time. I was traveling around America on Greyhound buses, and we arranged to meet, and I got to Pittsburgh one morning, and I called you up, and you're like, oh, man, I'm moving house with a friend now. Sorry, I'm not going to come to Pittsburgh. I'm not going to come and see you. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. So I went on the bus, and I went and saw Buster Douglas in Ohio, I think it was. So we were due to do an interview, and then you were moving house that day. But when you talk about Pittsburgh, I was there like a fleeting moment. So obviously I saw there's a lot of hills there, right? And you can see the industry and stuff and that. So it doesn't look like it's a place where it would have like too many bad neighborhoods when you just go through it. And then, but like from what you said, man, it's just, I suppose everywhere's got them, right?
I mean, everywhere, I think.
I think there was three school shootings, you know, just in McKees Rocks.
If you look up McKees Rocks, I think it's the worst. It's like, yeah, the worst, number one worst in Pennsylvania. Worst.
Jeez, man. But hey, I can't. But hey, you've more than made up for not showing up that day today, man, because that the stuff you told me, man, has just blown me away, man. I mean, I don't really know what I can say.
Like, you can come out here. You can come out here. I promise he'll be here.
I would love to. Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I kind of regularly come out to Vegas, so I would love to hook up with you guys for sure. And how you haven't found your way onto Netflix yet, I don't know, but you will do, I'm sure, because it's a hell of a story and it needs to be told. And man, I just wish you every success moving forward. So let me ask you this. I suppose you're going to be a little bit biased, but is Gino a good kid?
Great kid. That's it right there. He's a great kid. Like, he's not a kid that's in the trouble. He's not a kid that is involved with alcohol. He's not involved with drugs. He's not involved with his friends. I mean, we're in a neighborhood. These houses are $500,000. You know what I mean? Or higher. I mean, that's a lot of money. So I think that the people that are grow up like that, they're more so, it's different than being in everybody's on Section 8.
Hey, so you know what I mean? So the way that you address that question, right, just leads me to think that the way that, and how proud you sound of him, makes me think that you feel that he deserves the best version of you, right? Is that's where I'm coming from?
Yeah, that's 100%. 100%. If I can't give him the best version of you, I would like for you to fly out, take me in the backyard, and shoot me in the back of the head.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to do that. But I will come out. I will come out. And I'd love to spend some time with you guys for sure. I mean, it's funny because I covered your career. So obviously I've seen all the stuff that we've talked about and I've seen the headlines and stuff, but obviously it's very different if you get the opportunity to explain it, right? And to talk about it. Yeah. And you know, it's something that people like me will never be able to relate to. Fortunately, you know, in some ways, obviously I would never want to relate to the trauma of your childhood, and I would never understand the pitfalls of fame and celebrity and quick money, you know, that just appears overnight. Like, how do you deal with that? Particularly when it's the complete opposite of what you've ever had.
Yeah, overnight. And I just wasn't ready for it, I guess. I just wasn't ready. But you know what? It is what it is. It's over with. It's done with. Now I'm moving. Now I'm going to move on and just work with my son. Help out any, you know what I mean? Work with, hopefully I can get some good,
now you know,
develop good fighters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, hey, man, I know we swapped some messages. Know, yeah, go
real
on.
Quick. Right now, I look at myself. I'm like, I'm a experienced. I look as a trainer. So I gotta say, I can't say you're this and you're that. Nah, you gotta prove that. Just like I did when I was a boxer. I'm a 4-round fighter now. I'm just coming up. You know what I mean? And I'm willing to work my ass off like I did to become a champion. I'm willing to do that for another human being. You know what I mean? And give what I know to him. And that's it. I mean, it's just a better way for me to get. Religion and all that, but you know, you ever heard of purgatory?
Yes, yeah, of course.
I'm trying to get to purgatory.
So that's the one where you don't know where you're going, right?
I'll be all right with that. And the more you give back, the more you give your heart and soul and be who you are. You know what I mean? Your passion and what you love and everything. And I think everything will be all right. I think it's going to be all right.
I feel like you're more aligned with your purpose.
Yeah, man. That's so good. And hey, I'm really pleased that we're in touch, like on social media and stuff. And I very much hope we continue that into the future, man. I wish you nothing but good things.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate for me to have me on air.
Guys, thank you so much. What's that?
I'm sorry for that Pittsburgh. And probably I was probably doing the.
Maybe, man. Hey, we move on, and hey, you more than got it back today. So thank you so much. I'm grateful. Thank you very much, guys.
I'm on that.
Take care.
So I'm not sure there are any words I can say to add to that that will justify or that will explain it or anything else. I just thought it was absolutely sensational. Paul was so, so good. I actually hardly had the chance to ask any of the questions I prepared or that we prepared because he was so forthcoming and he beat me to the punch time and time again. And stuff I didn't think he was going to talk about, he did. And you know, afterwards I was like, oh, I could have asked him that, but it just went so quickly, and he was a step ahead of me the whole time, and I thought he was really, really interesting and really good. Before I leave you guys, huge thanks to Delco Safety Compliance and Hanson Lee Resourcing. Delco Safety Compliance are a leading provider of professional fire risk assessments and safety services nationwide, and they provide expert impartial advice on all aspects of fire health and safety compliance. And you can find out more at delcosafety.co.uk. We're also brought to you by Hanson Lee Resourcing. They were voted the UK's best specialist insurance sector recruitment firm at the Corporate Excellence Awards. Not only do Hanson Lee find you the best people, they'll help you retain them. And you can find out more at hansonlee.com. A reminder, Ringside Rewind with me, Ian Dark, and John Rawling is on the way. You can already get the first 6 episodes up on my Patreon, patreon.com/Tristix, and you can get access to next week's Boxing Live stories ahead of the game too. And you can listen to the trailer for Ringside Rewind on all good podcast platforms from now. But guys, before I leave you, just wanted to say that was incredible stuff from Paul Spadafor. I hope we work together again in the future. That was just, well, what can I say? I'll be back next week.